Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 52%, actually 53% of U.S. eligible voters and less than 50%, we learned last week, of the human population, women are still not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote for nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, and economic arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KKFI staff, management, volunteers, or the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart with Ebony Johnson, and we have a great filled show today with, we're going to start with Sue Ellen Freed, who's going to talk about the prison system and women specifically reentering the system, working with women. And then we'll, first we'll start with news from Ebony, but then we'll go the second segment to Lou Montanay and Jackie Utter with two women who are planning to be arrested and have been arrested before for a peaceful demonstration, with a little bit of civil disobedience added in. So let's start now with Ebony and the news.
All right. The veteran golf commentator Peter Allis has suggested that women who want to play at Muirfield should marry a member. The 85-year-old former Ryder Cup player was reacting to a vote on accepting women into the club that narrowly failed to achieve the two-thirds majority required to bring about change. Muirfield has staged the Open Championship 16 times, most recently in 2013, but it has been taken off the open roster as a result of women being denied permission to join. Allis, one of the most distinctive voices in golf, told BBC Radio 5 Live, quote, "The women who are there as wives of husbands, they get all the facilities. If somebody wants to join, well, you'd better get married to somebody who's a member." He went on to say, "I believe clubs were formed years ago by people of like spirit. Doctors, lawyers, accountants, bakers, butchers, whatever they like. And they joined in like spirit to talk amongst them and do whatever. I want to join the WVS, which is Women's Voluntary Service, but unless I have a few bits and pieces nipped away on my body, I'm not going to make it in." The Guardian reported May 19th. A group of men led by a former kickboxer forced their way into a brothel in St. Petersburg, Russia, smashing a hole in the front door. They rounded up the 10 women and one man they found inside the building, then shoved them outside and made them march through the streets nude to a local police station. When the group arrived at the station early Wednesday, all the officers on duty reportedly stopped what they were doing, hurrying to find clothes for the women and make sense of what was happening. The kickboxer, Vyacheslav Datsik, who had recently been released from prison, quietly filed a formal report and slipped out. He and his accomplices then attempted another attack on a second establishment that same night. Asked why his men forced their prisoners to walk the street naked, Dasik sarcastically told the news website Fontanka, "The country should know its heroes." According to Fontanka, Dasik even forced his hostages to listen to a lecture about the ills of, quote, paid love, while ordering them to remove their clothes. Dasik's invasion spree ended at a motel where he was subdued by security guards and turned over to law enforcement. While prostitution is illegal in Russia, the only reported charges now being prepared by St. Petersburg police are against Dasik for hooliganism and intentional property damage. PRI reported May 20th. Ahakpa Sherpa, a 42-year-old woman born in Nepal, climbed Mount Everest for the seventh time on Friday, breaking her own record for the most summits of the world's highest mountain by any woman, a hiking official said. Reuters reported May 20th. And that's the news.
Well, thank you, Ebony. I have to comment that Mount Everest is one of my things that I'm just fascinated by. I watch Mount Everest movies over and over because I can't imagine how you could subject yourself to that kind of torture.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
for a woman to have done that seven times.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to introduce your guest, Stephanie?
I will. We are so delighted to have in studio with us today Sue Ellen Freed. She is a community activist who has been involved with various social issues over the past 50 years. She is a past president and current life board member of Prevent Child Abuse America, co-founder of Reaching Out From Within, a self-help program for incarcerated men and women in Kansas prisons, and a link, is that L-I-N-C, commissioner. She was a professional dance movement therapist in psychiatric hospitals and has written 4 books on bullying. And today, Sue Ellen is joining us in particular to speak about the Reaching Out From Within prison program. And we'll talk further about women and why women get into the system and the program in itself. But welcome, Sue Ellen. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you. So can you share with our audience what you've learned about the prison systems and then kind of what led you to Reaching Out From Within and what that program is about?
The prison system needs a complete overhaul. Although I do believe, from what I've heard from the men and women, that the Kansas system is a kinder environment than many other state prisons. And I feel so fortunate that we have had the endorsement of the Kansas Department of Corrections to have our program. And it's extremely unique because the program, which consists of a curriculum on the topics of child abuse, spouse abuse, sexual abuse, substance abuse, addiction, anger and management, forgiveness, communication skills, the inmates run the program themselves. They elect their own officers. They choose which unit of the book they want to facilitate. And when people ask me what I do as a volunteer, I say that I am present. Mm. I am a witness to personal transformations. Mm. And my presence makes a statement that says what you are doing is of such value to yourselves and to each other and to me. I am inspired every week that I'm there.
Wonderful. So as a part of the overhaul, do you believe that programs like Reaching Out From Within, which are self-transformational programs, are a part of some of that change that'll take place? Because at one point, I'm not sure if this is the same, is it 80% of offenders will come back into the system once they get out because there's not maybe much change that has taken place once they've left prison?
I've heard 98%.
98, really? Okay.
So the thing that is so remarkable about our program is that people who have gone through our program, for instance, if you attend between 20 and 40 meetings, the recidivism rate for that group is 23%. Mm-hmm. If you attend between 40 and 60 meetings, it drops to 17%. But if you're in the program for a year, mm-hmm. if you're there for more than 60 sessions, the recidivism rate drops to 8%. Mm. And the national recidivism rate is between 50 and 67%.
Yeah.
So if all of these people are going to be coming back into your neighborhood, being part of your community, why wouldn't you want to have people who have worked on all of these issues while they were serving time and are coming back out to be more tender parents, to be more supportive spouses, to be more loyal employees, to want to spread the word of nonviolence, which they have become addicted to, mm-hmm. into your community?
I'd like to say one of the ways that I was reached out to Sue Ellen is I saw the Kemper Museum had the Faces of Change exhibit on display, and I saw it and was moved by it. And what it is a collection of black and white photos of inmates from the Kansas prison system, and they had a line. Can you speak to that a little bit more,
yes.
Sue Ellen, of the how that came about?
Yes, a photographer, Nick Vidros, who was a journalist before he was a photographer, so he has an intense curiosity about everything. And when he heard that I go to the prisons, he asked if he could accompany me. And he walked into one of our groups, and he was so captured by the spirit, the humanity, the intense discussions, the way they welcomed him, the intimate vulnerability in order to become who you want to be and not who you were, that he came out and he said, you know, if we could just bring the whole world into this room with these people, they would change their minds. Mm-hmm. He said, but I can bring a camera. I can put a face on this program. So the warden of the prison, Rex Pryor, has always supported every idea we've had to want to change people. And he was allowed to come in and take photographs, mm-hmm. Over 40 photographs. And in order to be part of the exhibit, you had to sign a release form. Mm-hmm. And then you had to write, what would you want people to know about you besides the fact you've committed a crime? Mm-hmm. And they would write what they wanted people to know about them. And then this wonderful copywriter, Jeff Bremser from Bernstein Rain, took the paragraph and extracted it into a sentence that was underneath the portrait. And people who came wrote postcards, and they said, I have completely changed my perception about people who are inside those walls. Mm-hmm. And that's what we love about, that it's so transformational.
Yeah. And some of, just for the listening audience, some of those lines were, do you recall any specific ones?
Oh, I
ones?
Do.
Can you share some of the
Oh, yes.
The
One things? Of the women who has been there for over 20 years and might never get out, whose portrait was there, under her photo were these words, love is the answer, no matter what the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Sue Ellen, on, I have just some strong feelings about our prison system really being a money system, you know, and there not being a genuine desire for rehabilitation or for, you know, actually doing some transformation work, but more so, oh, this is a good money-making business. We can, you know, connect with the court systems and do all these various things and just have people in prisons, and we can make a lot of money doing that. Do you see any changes taking place in our government and or really in the hearts of people to where we are doing more self-transformational work that maybe can ultimately make our prison system, I don't want to say non-existent, but definitely not a stranger from what it is today.
Yes. I believe that many prisons around the country are privatized, mm-hmm. which means everything about the prison is in the hands of people whose only purpose is to make money. Mm-hmm. And while there are a couple of programs that are privatized in Kansas, Kansas is not a privatized system. Mm-hmm. And there are many opportunities to get a GED. Mm-hmm. Now, when budget cuts happened, members of our Reaching Out From Within program become the tutors for the people who want to get GEDs.
Okay.
We have people in our program who, when the terminally ill reach that point where mm-hmm. they are hospitalized. Mm-hmm. Our volunteers have trained themselves to be hospice workers, mm-hmm. and they make sure that no inmate dies alone.
Mm-hmm.
Giving back is a part of the DNA of our program.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of the way people, it's part of atoning, it's mm-hmm. part of forgiving themselves because they want to be forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to talk about the women a little bit because it's interesting. the men come into the system with a lot of feeling of wanting to blame others because of why they are there. Mm-hmm. But the women blame themselves for everything that has happened to them.
Mm, yeah.
And <Sure. laughs> when you hear the stories of the sexual molestation that they have endured, three women were on a panel once for our board, traveled to Topeka to hear their stories. They had all run away from home at the age of 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. When their volunteer sponsor asked them if they would share about some of the sexual experiences they had had, one woman said that she said she was had a sexually transmitted disease, chlamydia, at the age of 4. Mm-hmm. Another one had her first rape baby at the age of 14. Mm-hmm. The volunteer sponsor of their group is a man who has such admiration and respect for them. And the last night that they are there before they're either transferred or released, they have a chance to say anything. And they always turn to Dave Ranney and they say, because of you, I will never again be connected to an abusive man. I never knew there was such a thing as a man who didn't want to exploit me. Mm. I thought that all men were that way because those were the only men I have ever, ever known.
Mm. Wow.
So they are dealing with so much. The data says that 78% of women in prison in Kansas have a mental illness. And the warden said she believes it's closer to 100% because of things that happened to them before they ever got there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this program helps them heal themselves and each other because they can say anything and know that they will not be judged for anything that they have done or has been done to them. And that's the only way that you can ever really heal yourself is to get all that toxic poison mm-hmm. outside of your soul. And the way they support each other is so beautiful. I remember one night the sponsor brought a social worker to come in and talk about how to be a parent while you're incarcerated. And the first thing they did was run and get 5 rolls of toilet paper because they knew the tears were going to flow. And they did. Because being a mother while you're inside a prison and you know that your children are, most of them are in foster care, and you had been in foster care mm-hmm. and you knew what that meant. Mm-hmm. They are just aching, mm-hmm. just aching. They are open wounds. And when I sit in on a meeting and I see how, as you said, transformational this program is for them, I am in tears.
Yeah. What is it that you would like to see, just giving, because you've been with Reaching Out From Within over 34 years, so you've done this work for quite a while. What would be your recommendation for how we deal with crime in our country and deal with people, you know, not just the acts, but with the people? Because to your point, if these women, if a lot of the women that are there have been molested or traumatized in other ways, then, any person can kind of understand how, if you've struggled to deal with something, you may act out in a way that is not right. healthy, but you can be acting out in the best way you know how, or trying to actually reach out
yes.
for some help. So what are some of the recommendations that you would make in how we change the way we view incarceration and people in our whole court system?
Well, I think I keep meeting people who came into the system when they were teenagers. Mm-hmm. And the brain information that we're getting now says that we are not fully mature until we're 25 or 26. Mm-hmm. So you take teenagers who have grown up in dysfunctional families, dysfunctional neighborhoods, a dysfunctional society, and they make poor choices, and then they spend the rest of their life in prison paying for something that they really were not mature enough to understand the consequences of what they were doing. Mm-hmm. But I believe if we could get Reaching Out From Within into every other state, it is now in North Carolina. We'd love to get it into Missouri. and all these other states, because every time, like North Carolina, they are so in love with this program. Mm-hmm. They have 57 prisons, and they want to spread it to every one of their 57 prisons. Mm-hmm. So if we could just get every state to let us bring this program in, at least people who are there unjustly or even justly will have a chance to feel empowered, that they have something to give back to society. They are a blessing and a gift because of what they have learned about themselves.
Mm-hmm. This is Sharon. Oh, dear, I just dropped my phone. I want to interrupt and say a couple of things. On Jaws of Justice last week, I heard that in Kansas, they had recently raised the age from 10 that they could charge a 10-year-old as an adult to 12, and they're getting ready to raise it to 14. I think they have a bill now. And I was stunned by the fact that you could charge a 10 or a 12-year-old or even a 14-year-old as an adult. And I guess it's based on the heinous of the crime or whatever that they do that, but then that's kind of subjective, maybe. I don't know. But then another statistic I heard someplace this week, they had built two colleges, universities in California, but the number of prisons they had built was in the double digits in the last 10 years. And I just thought that was phenomenal when you said there were 57 prisons in North Carolina.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of people who financially benefit from prisons. They're the steel workers and the everything that goes into the bricklayers, whatever. I don't want to put it all on them because they're just doing what the legislators have decided to keep constructing. And once you construct a prison, you're going to make sure that it gets filled. Mm-hmm. But there is this amazing thing that's happening around criminal justice reform. And Kansas just did pass a bill that is doing a lot of focus on juveniles in the system. And I'm so excited that that's happening. And I attended a conference last year that was co-sponsored by the ACLU and the Koch brothers. Hmm. And so there are Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals that are all beginning to realize the amount of money that we're spending to incarcerate people and then the damage that we do to them when they get out and try to get a job or be productive is just horrendous. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of energy that's happening now, and I'm very excited about that.
Mm-hmm. I, just listening to some of this conversation, I thought about, in James Baldwin's By Fire Next Time, he said, I know very few people who really want to be free. And either most of them or none of them are American. And he said, because to be free, you have to free other people. And America is the most incarcerated country in the world.
Yes, yes.
And so, you know, and that was really piercing because, you know, just his point of to be free, you have to be willing to free other people. And so as much as we say the land of the free, we haven't lived up to that name yet. Because if most of us are, if we hold all of this in the highest incarceration rate of any other country,
yes,
it questions what do we mean by free. And if we understand that, perhaps that liberty, it really is for all, not just some, the way that we're operating.
But you know what I love to share with the men and women that I have such respect for is a statement from Maya Angelou, and it says, ordinary people who experience hardships are preparing themselves for an extraordinary destiny. Mm. And I believe that. I believe that people who go through what you go through to go through the criminal justice system, and if you can come out with your heart and soul and mind intact, you have so much to offer this world. Mm-hmm. And we need to open our arms and learn from you because you have learned what the rest of us need to discover about how to survive, how to be resilient, how to be compassionate, how to do healing.
Mm-hmm. I think self-blame is a, that's a big, that is a, because ultimately it is the, it is being willing to see ourselves differently and believe that we are actually worthy of forgiveness and worthy of being, you know, just being seen differently as a whole.
Yes.
Because if, to your point, some of the stories that you've said, and then for the women to take on the blame for themselves, and how many, I mean, gosh, I know how much I blame myself about a lot of things, and how just even getting over that,
right,
working through that, can be, yes, a challenge, you know, with it can just be a real challenge.
Talking about challenge, I want to tell you about a woman that I am mentoring in the reentry, mm-hmm, system, that program that we have in Kansas. She's a grandmother. Mm-hmm. She had been in prison 3 times, always involved with drugs. Mm-hmm. But this last time, she joined Reaching Out From Within. Mm-hmm. And she is one of the most beautiful women I have ever known. But because she had a felony conviction, she couldn't get a job. And the only way she could find to support herself was to learn how to drive a forklift truck and to drive a shift from 11 o'clock at night till 7 o'clock in the morning. Hmm. But she will do anything and everything. She is never going back inside the walls. Mm-hmm. And she wants to share her spirit and her determination with the world. And I am in awe of her.
Yeah.
How many prisons is this program in Kansas?
There are 17 groups that meet weekly. Some prisons have 3 groups because there's minimum, medium, and maximum security.
Mm-hmm.
So we
That's
are
amazing.
In, we
That's
are in every
amazing.
Single prison, and mm-hmm. every single one of them is magical. A psychiatrist friend of mine who was a volunteer, and every December I visit every single prison, and she would go with me, and we would go in, and we would come out, and she would say, if you knew how much time and money I spent to be a psychiatrist. And those people are doing for themselves exactly what I would do for them if I was their therapist.
Mm.
And we'd go to the next prison. She said, I can't believe this. It is just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It is phenomenal.
And it's an eye-opener that we really do have the power to heal ourselves. It comes with knowing that we have that capacity,
yes,
you know, and then the capacity to respond to whatever it is that ails us, is that I think your program speaks to that.
And what have you done to try to introduce this into the Missouri system?
We've tried a couple of times to get a meeting with some administrators, and we're going to keep trying.
Is the governor of any assistance on this? Or?
We haven't gone to the governor. We're trying to work within the system,
uh-huh,
and find someone in administration that would listen to our story.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's someone out there listening now that,
yeah,
might have some influence or something. That would be great. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to get a hold of you, a website? Or?
Yes, Reaching Out From Within. There's a website. I think it's www.rofw.org. And if that, I hardly ever go to the website, but I'll figure it out and I'll get back in touch with both of you to let you know.
I think that is the website that I've gone to.
Reaching
out from within.
ROFW.org. Reaching out from within. That should be easy to remember. Wow, 34 years you've been going every week.
Well, you know, sometimes I go on vacation, and sometimes
you
know, there's holidays. I can't,
yeah,
say I've been there,
every
you know,
week, yeah,
but almost, mm-hmm, every week.
And who works with you on this?
Oh, there are volunteers in our programs that once they go, it's like we become addicted.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
We become addicted to going to the meetings, but what I tell the inmates is, you don't understand this, but when you get out, you are becoming part of a society that is addicted to technology.
Mm.
And, of course, they have no computers and no cell phones, so it's Rip Van Winkle when you come out. And I said, you are our last bastion of hope because you still know the value of looking into somebody's eyes, sharing your feelings, talking about what's going on inside of your being. And we need you to hold on to this because technology is taking our social relationships down a path that I'm really fearful about.
Yeah, Facebook, and I try to avoid Facebook.
Yeah, I'm not on it. But I would like to share the number if people are interested in calling. That's on the website, rofw.org. That is the site. I just looked it up.
Sorry, forgive me. I had my mic turned off. But I would like to share that is the website, rofw.org, and the contact number there is 913-424-3604. So that's 913-424-3604, and the website is rofw.org. And so people can go there and find out more about the Reaching Out From Within program. And perhaps, do you have, I know there's things to get involved and to donate, but are there any other things you'd like to share before we let you go here?
Well, we're always looking for people who either would like to go inside the walls, mm-hmm. but also to become mentors mm-hmm. to people who are coming out mm-hmm. because they need a lot of support when they're trying to make that transition back to the community. And then we're always trying to find extraordinary ways to change people's hearts and minds, mm-hmm. like the photographer that came. Who would have believed that a photographer could have brought about such tremendous opportunities for people to change. So you never know what you have to bring to us, and we welcome you.
Well, thank you so much. Any other, Sharon, did you?
Well, I just, because Lou and Jackie are sitting over here, and we had a little discussion beforehand, they've been incarcerated in jails before, and we're going to hear about that. And Sue Ellen said that the difference between a jail and a prison is like night and day.
That's what I've heard from the prisoners, mm-hmm. that prisons, they are a community to some extent, for better or for worse. And for all the issues, but you can find like-minded people. But in a jail, there's no outside to go to. There's no way of forming a community. Well, they're going to be able to tell you a lot more about it than I can.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us and just sharing the stories and giving us hopefully maybe a different perspective on people that are in prison and even opportunities for transformation such as your program. We appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
I do want to say I am not advocating for every person who's ever been in prison. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who are in prison who I hope will never get out. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people who will never get out who deserve to be out. Mm-hmm. And people who use their time wisely, soulfully, beautifully, are a gift.
Thank you so much, Sue Ellen Free from Reaching Out From Within. And we are going to take a break and we will be back. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio, and this is the Every Woman Show.
The 12th Annual Truce Festival, featuring live local performances including hip-hop, spoken word, bluegrass, Latin fusion, R&B, soul, reggae, and rock and roll, as well as modern hip-hop and oriental dance performances and gymnastics, cheerleading, and martial art demonstration, will be held on Truce Avenue between 31st and Linwood on Saturday, May 21st, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Activities for kids and adults. This message is a public service announcement of 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. More info at TruceVillage.com.
When you were a kid and got hurt, you'd go to your mother.
For TLC. Someone to stand up for you.
Same goes now if you're hurt by a drunk driving crash. Just go to the Mothers.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
MAD for short. Call 877-MAD-HELP.
Help and no charge, of course.
Of course. Learn more about how we help victims of drunk driving next time you visit at MAD.org.
This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And we're back. We're back with Every Woman, and we have Lou Montané and Jackie Utter with, with Peaceworks, who are going to talk with us about what they have upcoming. And Sue Ellen's leaving the room now, and they've exchanged cards, so it looks like there may be some help with approaching the Missouri prison system. So, good. Everybody set? Lou.
Hey, thanks for having us. We've got an upcoming event that we want to share with everyone who's interested in a nuclear-free world. And then we'll kind of segue into what Sue Ellen was talking about, prison, being in jail, getting arrested. But first we want to tell everyone about this upcoming event on Memorial Day, coming up really soon. It will be on Monday the 30th. So that's just a week from this Monday. And it is sponsored by Peaceworks Kansas City and several other groups around town. We're going to walk from the old nuclear weapons plant to the new plant. And at the new plant, which is out on 150 Highway and Botts Road, there we're going to have a die-in. And we do this because a nuclear weapons plant really is all about death. But most of all, we want to memorialize the people who worked at the old plant that they just shut down and basically left because it was very contaminated. And we want to memorialize the workers that worked there that died from exposure to the toxic chemicals and the ones that still have ongoing health problems because of that. So we want everyone that is interested to come with us. You can either walk from the old plant to the new plant, which is 10 miles, and then we'll have our protest there and crossing the line and arrests. Or you can just start and go the last mile, which would meet at 11 o'clock. Oh, the 8 a.m. from Bannister will leave. And then at 11 a.m. we'll meet at Prospect and Missouri Highway 150, which is the start of a trail on the NSA property. And but it is public trail. And then, or you can just meet us at 12:15 at the new nuclear weapons parts plant, for the program and the die-in. And that's at 14510 Botts Road, Missouri Highway and Botts Road. And we'll repeat this information at the end of our talk here today, so people who want to join us can, and everyone is welcome. In a few minutes, we'll tie in with what she said. What Sue Ellen said, I found that absolutely fascinating, what she was talking about. Do you have any questions about the event?
I followed along in my car for a good part of it last year, driving slowly, parking, and was there for the die-in and the taps, and quite a few people turned out for that, and there were quite a few walkers.
Yes, I was surprised. A lot of people walked. I didn't because I was just getting over a broken foot. But we met at the site, and it's a very good experience. When we played taps, when the people died, what the people do is they have the name Maurice Copeland. You probably know him. He was a worker at the old plant, a supervisor, I believe. And this has been his cause for these last few years, to help draw attention to this, help the people that are sick and have died. And we do it to memorialize them. We read their names and a little bit, very short biography about them, and then that person who read the name falls down dead. And then when they're all, and plus we have some talking and education about it, and singing. And then my nephew plays taps, and even the security guards and the police are very respectful when we do this. It's just symbolic, but, you know, they take off their hats and they stand still, and then whoever is going to get arrested will cross the line.
Now, are you planning to get arrested this year?
Yes, Jackie and I both are. And anyone else who decides to at the last minute, they will warn us three times to get back over the line onto the public property. And when we refuse, then we'll be arrested. This will be my third time. This is Jackie's first time. She's very excited. I'll let her tell you why she's going to do this.
So I was very excited to get into Peace Works and to be involved. I wanted to start with civil resistance because I vote, I'm active in the political process, but sometimes I feel like a message just doesn't get out. And I feel like sometimes you really need to make a statement by getting arrested to get a dialogue going, get people excited about what they're passionate about, especially in the political process. So I'm excited to get arrested. It'll be my first one.
Let's hear from Lou. What's it like to get arrested?
Okay. As she said, we're making a statement. A lot of people, you know, you can protest, and that's great, and you can educate the public, and you can put things on ballots, as we did a few years ago. But something just catches people's attention. If you are willing to get arrested, if you're willing to break the law, some people call it civil resistance. We call it divine obedience. Or they call it civil disobedience. We call it divine obedience. Mm-hmm. Because we just can't do any less. We have to do something to draw attention to the issue, not so much to us. But unless we're willing to do that, then, you know, people think, well, you know, it's a good cause, but really, is it that important? And we just want to draw attention to how important it is. My experience with arrest is at the same site, the nuclear weapons plant. The military industrial complex doesn't get why we do this, but my grandchildren do. I'm concerned about their future and all of the horrible contamination that was left behind at the old plant. And this is happening all over the country. There's several sites. There's Hanford, Washington. There's Rocky Flats. There's places all over the country that this is happening, this contamination. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get arrested. And my experience has been that, you know, it's just like you see on TV. You get handcuffed. You go to jail. You are dealt with when they're ready to deal with you. You may, you know, sit in a room all day long with your hands cuffed. And then they take your mugshot, you know, right, left, center. They take your fingerprints. They take the laces out of your shoes. They took the cross from around my neck. And then they lead you in, and the cage door is shut. And there you are. The first time I was alone, there were some guys there too, but they went to the guys' section. I went alone to the women's part of the jail. This was in downtown Kansas City. And I met there some wonderful people that were already there. And this is where I really connected with what Sue Ellen was talking about. And I found one thing. You know, I chose to go to jail. The women that were there did not choose to be there. Most of them were there because of poverty. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, without poverty, there wouldn't have been any reason for them to be there. Mm-hmm. One gal I talked to had written a bad check, and so she had, and couldn't afford to pay the fine, so she had a warrant out on her. Her boyfriend beat her up, so the neighbors called the police, and they came and arrested her, not the boyfriend, because she had that warrant. And it was the same with most of the other women in there that I talked with.
It seems like just listening to your story and Sue Ellen as well, that we have a perception of people in prison are somehow not like us. You know, like, especially if you have a person that hasn't been to prison or whatnot, and that we don't really realize how much alike we are. And, you know, to your point, this lady dealing with poverty or, you know, various things that surely we can all connect to.
Right. They, when I think the first one I talked to was Stephanie, as soon as she found out a minister, she asked me if we could pray together. And I was very ashamed of myself that I didn't think of that first. After we had talked, she wanted to pray, so we did. Then I was walking around the jail cell just to get some exercise because it was quite a long time. And so they started following me. The other women started following me around, and we had a little aerobics class going on then. And then they said, "Do you sing? Can we sing?" And I said, "Oh, sure, let's sing." And the first song we said was kind of, she said, "Oh, do you know, song about going to heaven, the chariots."
Swing low, sweet chariot. Yes. I was just singing that, yeah.
That's the one she wanted to sing. And so we started to sing that. Everyone was getting a little sad, so we changed up the words to a version I had heard. It was "Swing Low, Sweet Cadillac." So then we started laughing, and the guards came immediately when they heard us laughing because they wanted to know what was going on.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very odd because another woman in the jail cell who was locked away from the rest of us was calling and calling for the guards and crying and saying, "Help me," and they never came. They never responded, but they heard us laughing, so they came immediately.
So. Now we do have a caller. Caller, are you there? You're on the air.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah. The woman was saying about, you know, they take your shoelaces and that stuff. Now, women I've talked to that got arrested from these deals, they say, you know, the first time they didn't realize it, and the second time they don't wear pantyhose because they make you take those off.
Okay, well, there's lots of good reasons not to wear pantyhose.
Well, this way you can't hang yourself by them.
Yeah, sure.
Every woman that got arrested the first time, they were wearing pantyhose and they didn't realize it.
Yeah.
So embarrassed. But anyway, hey, peace out.
Thank you.
You know, I haven't worn pantyhose in so many years, I can't even remember. I didn't know women still wore pantyhose.
Yeah, I think he was talking about in years gone by.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, my grandmother, she still wears
it. Does she?
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Does she get arrested?
No.
Okay. I actually had a comment on that. I work for a program that helps people reenter society after being in prison.
Okay.
You can name that program.
Oh, Journey to New Life here in Kansas City, Missouri. Okay. And so I've told a couple of my clients, like, yeah, I'm going to get arrested with Peace Works. And they always tell me, they say, you know, wear a white sports bra, white underwear, and white socks, because then you don't have to take off your underwear when you go into county jail.
Wait a minute. Why white? What's that about, white?
That's just the colors that they give you. They give you,
Then you can leave your own on.
Because
You mean they're going to strip you down and give you new underwear.
Yep.
How bizarre. Have you had that experience?
Not in the city jails. No.
Oh.
No.
But this next one will be
the county. You'll be, you're going to be arrested in Jackson County?
Jackson County, yes.
Jackson County. So you'll be at the Jackson County Jail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It won't be Kansas City, Missouri. Will this be your first time in Jackson County, Lou?
Yes. The city jail is closed down for some reason, so it will be different this time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Now, Lou, you've said this will be your third time, correct?
Right.
So have you, the first two times, did you feel like you made the impact that you wanted to make with that statement?
Yes. For one thing, it goes on the news, and it goes on Facebook. It gets, you know, spread around the network, mm-hmm. and people, you know, they come up to you and ask you, why did you do that? And then mm-hmm. you have a chance to witness for that cause.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's a testimony to my grandchildren, mm-hmm. and they know that Grandma's doing that for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the military-industrial complex doesn't care, but it gets the word out.
Mm-hmm.
It gets the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people didn't even know that they were making nuclear weapons parts here in Kansas City.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. See, we have a nuclear proliferation, a non-proliferation treaty. Obama talked about this all through his candidacy, mm-hmm. that he was going to reduce or, you know, our goal is abolishing nuclear weapons. But that hasn't happened yet. And when I found out they were going to be making more, and right here in Kansas City, I thought, what else can I do? Mm-hmm. Got to do this.
And this plant, when was this new plant started? After Obama's first election, I'm pretty sure,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It opened. They had their dedication service. I think it was their dedication ceremony. I believe it was in 2014 or 15. I can't remember. But it was after, mm-hmm. well after Obama was elected. So we had at the same time a dedication ceremony, D-E-A-D.
Dedication.
Because that's what it was all about.
Yeah.
Death.
Now, I do want to, before we go here, you mentioned people not understanding some of the parts and different things that are left behind, or just kind of the, what actually comes along with having, you know, having the plan and
okay. You guys can see this. The one people on the radio can't. This is a long, long scroll that I typed up, or I copied and pasted together all these papers. It's 900 toxins that were left at the old Bannister nuclear weapons parts plant. And mm-hmm. this was put out by the Department of Labor. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something we were just guessing at. Mm-hmm.
They're just left there.
They're going to try to clean it up. They had, well, Jackie can tell you a little bit about this.
So the government priced that cleaning up this plant would be in the millions, a very big number. Mm-hmm. And a private company came in and said that they could clean it up for significantly less. A lot less. And there's concerns of if the government has priced cleanup at a certain amount and a private contractor can come and quote unquote clean it up for so much less, how effective will it be? What would they do with that land? What if they made parks, housing, schools with all these toxins? Mm-hmm. Just what will happen?
I'm so jaded. I would suspect that people saw a government contract and an opportunity to really bid it up, because the government's not noted for their low-cost efforts. You know, we're talking about, what, $700 hammers and what have you. We've all heard about that. But then for this other company to come in and underbid it so significantly, I mean, you got to know nothing much is going to happen for sure. Yeah.
Right.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Some suggestions have been that they're going to bury it in cement, you know, pave over it. But, you know, do you see cement crumble along the road? Yes. It is not a seal. It will not keep in radioactive material or bad toxins. They leach out into the water system, into Indian Creek and the land all around. In Hanford, they tried Hanford, Washington, which is a 586 square mile nuclear dump site, nuclear weapons and plutonium weapons. And they found out that they cannot pave over it. They cannot contain it in steel tanks. They even tried double shell tanks, and it still leached out. So now they have a vitrification plant, which is to encase it in glass and then stainless steel. And that, they project, will only last 60 years. Mm-hmm. So we've got to do something that is more than a private company underbidding the projected cost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I give the details again of our event?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's Memorial Day, a week from Monday. 8 a.m., we're starting the walk at the Bannister Road and Wayne Road. That's the old plant, the old nuclear weapons parts plant that a lot of people didn't even know it was there. It's shut down now, and nothing's left there but the contaminated structures. at 11 o'clock. If you don't want to walk all that way, you can meet us at the Last Mile, which is a nice trail there, Prospect and Missouri Highway 150. And then if you just want to come for the program, come at 12:15, and we'll have the program, the die-in, play taps, and have the arrest, and learn about the people who are sick and the people who have died because of the old nuclear weapons plant, and who are now, you know, now we are endangering a new set of people at the new plant. Oh, and I'll let Jackie tell you about how to contact us if you have any questions.
If you have more questions or want to know what PeaceWorks activities are going on, you're welcome to visit peaceworkskc.org. And we also have a Facebook page, PeaceWorks KC. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for what you're doing to educate the public about the dangers of nuclear proliferation, nuclear bombs. I heard something recently. I would love to go to Nagasaki and have at the memorial service that they're having coming up for the anniversary of the atom bomb. That would be really exciting, wouldn't it?
Have we got a moment?
Yes, we do have a moment.
I went out to Hanford, and I went into Reactor 31B, which was built in 1941, and that was the place that they processed the plutonium for the 15-ton bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki, and it was really creepy, and I knew at that time I had to do a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lou Montanay and Jackie Utter, for the work you're doing. And we will want to hear more about your experiences.
Okay, we'll be back.
Yeah, and we're our thoughts and hearts will be with you as you plan to be arrested and but stand up for passionately for something that you believe in, too.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in today. Please stay tuned for Donna Wolf with Urban Connections, and later on, guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. And we would like to also say that join us next week again at 3 o'clock. Carol Maillard, one of the co-founders of Sweet Honey and the Rock, will be joining us from the phone. So we're going to have an interview with her, and delighted to have her join us and talk about their social justice and the different movements they've done with their singing group over the past 40 years. So, anything else, Sharon, before we wrap here?
I can't think of anything else. I'd tell you who else was going to be on next week, but my mind is blank.
Okay, well, have a great weekend, everybody.
I come from women who gave up their power. I come from women who gave up their name. And I come